Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Arts.
Hey, Dark Arts.
Hey, howdy. Hey. Hello.
Welcome. Or welcome back.
Or, you know, all the things. Yeah. Here we are.
Another week, another story.
This is a weird one. I'm not going to lie.
I'm actually super stoked for that then.
Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know. It's so weird. I don't know how to explain it. So, yeah, I don't have a whole lot, I guess, this week. Prelude.
I got nothing. I literally got nothing. It's just, you know, normal stuff.
Yeah. You know, we got things going in the works. We'll see. We got some stuff going on. We'll discuss and hopefully we can share soon. And yeah, I don't know. I'm like, we're in December now. I've got so much on my plate. My son has a birthday party to go to this Saturday that I was like, I need to get a present for that kid. And then I forgot their classroom is doing a white elephant gift exchange. So I need to get something for that. I mean, it's a $5 minimum, but I'm like,
yeah, it's a lot. Matt,
you know, but I'm like,
oh, I know, girl. It's a lot. Yeah. My daughter's birthday 2 days before Christmas. So I'm trying to do a birthday party in between there and trying to find a job still. So, you know, it's real stressful.
All the fun things. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we're at. That's it. That's all.
Yeah. That's all I've got right now, you guys.
Yeah. I literally have nothing else. So cool.
Yep. No.
On that note, Cassie, you just go right ahead.
Let's just dive right in.
Let's do it.
This week we are going to be in Madison, Wisconsin.
Ooh, we haven't been there for a while.
We haven't been to Wisconsin for a while. I meant to look up when the last episode was and I didn't. So
it's fine.
That's where we're at. And I'm honestly surprised that I have personally never heard of this case. Like, it's an older case. It's from 1977. Uh-huh. So it is hard to find a lot of information about.
Those are always hard. I hate the older ones, but sometimes those are the ones. Well, and those are the ones that nobody knows about because there's nothing on them as much. Yes. So it's like the good ones to cover, but you know.
This one, I am surprised, though, that there's not more out there. There is a book called Winter of Frozen Dreams by Carl Harder, and I did originally buy it on Kindle to try to read it. Couldn't get into it. The man was too, like, it was like he was trying to make, like, a detective, like, you know, one of those old noir, like,
oh yeah,
he did this, but it was like true crime, actually, because, like, some of the stuff, he was like, the detective took a sip of his coffee and winced. He'd forgotten the sugar. I'm like, dude, this isn't...
Yeah.
This is too much. So
some of those, it's like, just back up, bro.
Yeah. I was like, I understand trying to make it like interesting. So it's not just like, here are these facts that you're like a textbook on this case, but like, there's a way to do it. And this was not it.
Not his strong point.
Huh? No. So I did not. I just returned that. I was like, no, there's no way I can get through this 300 some pages of this.
Too much.
And then there is a movie based on the book, which I originally thought was a documentary. But luckily, before I went to go watch it, I realized it is not. It is a thriller based off of the book.
And what is it called?
It's called Winter of Frozen Dreams, which you can watch.
I feel like that sounds vaguely familiar for some reason. And that's why I don't know.
So I think... this movie came out in like 2016 or something like that.
Like more recent-ish than
or maybe 2007. It was in the 2000s. I want to say this movie came out. And you
so that's the same title as the book?
As the book.
Oh, okay.
And you can watch it on Amazon Prime for free or Tubi. No.
Did you watch it?
No, I want to, but I was like, because it's not, I might go back and watch it and see then. Just
for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, but since it's not actually, like, I want to see, like, how true to it they stayed and everything.
Huh.
So that, all that being said, I used a couple articles, but my main source was Once Upon a Crime podcast, which was episode 25, which was from, like, 2016, even. So, like, I couldn't find... anything more recent than that. So
it's going to be a good refresher, you know, for some.
Yes.
Maybe. There you go.
Yeah.
I think of the word I was looking for. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. So I've never personally listened to that podcast before. They've got quite a few episodes. So I don't
like
know.
That name. You know. That's a catchy name.
I know.
It's fun.
So if any of our listeners have listened to that, it's been a while at least. Maybe you won't remember it all. So on December 25th of 1977, which, yes, that's Christmas Day.
Okay, we're in the spirit.
Uh-huh. A 31-year-old man named Jerry Davies entered the Madison Police Department and stated to police that he had helped his fiance to bury a body the night before and that he could take them to the body. So police noted that when Jerry first walked in, he seemed really distraught, but they also believed that he was drunk or high because he seemed really unsteady.
Guilty conscience much, too?
Oh, yeah. This man is, yeah.
Cracking right away.
Oh, yeah. So they didn't believe him at first and stuff, but he took him to the body. It was a local, like, ski resort. Is Black something or other. I wrote it down in my notes and then I yeah.
It's fine. We get the idea.
Yep. So it was, like, in the parking lot. And the thing is they didn't bury the body very well because just walking up to it, they could see a hand sticking out.
Good effort. Okay.
So they very soon discover the nude body of a man who clearly has blunt force trauma to not only his head, but also his genitals.
Oh.
Which they said were black and blue and swollen.
Ow.
Mm-hmm. So Jerry confesses everything pretty quickly. He stated that he didn't know who this man was, but that on December 23rd, his fiance, Barbara Hoffman, called him to come over to her apartment that evening. And he was really surprised, but happy about this because he had thought she was leaving town to go see her family already. So he went over, he drank, watched TV, fell asleep. And then Barbara woke him up in the early morning hours of December 24th. So now we're at Christmas Eve, to tell him he needed to help her. She stated that when she came home on December 22nd from work, she found the body of a nude man in her bathroom, already dead. That she didn't know him, and she stated that she had covered him, like wrapped him up in a sheet, and dragged him down from her third floor apartment to the dumpster in her apartment parking lot, and like kind of buried him in a snow mound behind that. Because around this time frame now, too, like on Christmas Day, I guess it was negative 41.
Ooh.
Yeah. Brr. And they had received like 8 inches of snow in the last few days.
So it's like literally just ice at that point. Okay.
Yes. So, you know, Jerry was like, why don't you just call the police? And she's like, I can't do that. She thought that this was someone from her past trying to frame her. And we'll get back to that. Don't you worry. I see the questions.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in my head, like just from the beginning, walking in, finding a dead body in your house that you did not kill. Yeah, maybe call the cops regardless.
Right.
Just stop. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
You know.
Because that just happens frequently. Someone wants to frame you and goes to the trouble of putting this body in your house. But maybe. Okay, go on.
Yep.
That's it.
So they load the body into Jerry's car because, you see, Barb didn't have her own car. And actually, that morning, December 23rd, Jerry had picked Barbara up for work, and she seemed perfectly fine. Not like she had just found a dead body of an unknown man in her apartment the night before.
So, yeah, that would be a pretty traumatizing one, would think.
Yeah, so it's weird that she was like, no, we're all good, it's fine, yada, yada, no. And because, like, day. They had talked that morning, and he was like, hey, will I see you before you leave? And she's like, no, I'm too busy. And then she was like, okay, come over. So they load the car up, they bury this body, obviously not well, and he takes her back to her apartment. She's like, okay, you need to clean out your car really well. Vacuum it and then go and get some rest and don't say anything to anyone. Clearly he listened to that.
Yeah, I was like, sounds like he really took that to heart.
Yep. So let's back up a little bit, okay? First, let's talk a little bit about Jerry Davies and who he is. He was a bit of a loner. This is one thing I hated. In the podcast, she kept calling these men sad sacks. And I was like, that is so not okay. Like, that is so rude.
Yeah, that is like, rude. And you didn't even know them enough, like, personally to have the right to, like, have that kind of...
I was like, okay, judgmental. Like, that's not okay. Let's not refer to these people this way.
Maybe he just hated people like we do.
Right? Well, and Jerry seems like one of those. So he lived with his mom until the age of like 28.
Okay. That's
and then
to each their own.
And so she didn't live in Madison. I don't remember where she lived, but it was a little ways from Madison. So he got a job at the University of Wisconsin as a shipping clerk. But he would still drive back every weekend to, like, visit his mom.
Yeah.
And have dinner with her and stuff. So, like, he is just one of those, I think, socially awkward people. He wasn't good. He didn't make, like, good with people. He didn't make friends easily.
Right.
And he was a virgin at 28 years old, which, hey, whatever.
That's fine. Yeah.
But it wasn't long after moving to Madison that he found out about the many notorious, and I'm putting quotes here, massage parlors around town. So this is where I'm going to go off on a slight tangent here. For those who don't know, almost any type of place is called a massage parlor. It's a cover for sex work. Also, a little personal soapbox moment. We, as professionals, are massage therapists. We are not masseuse. That is that is such an outdated term that now has the negative connotation that if someone calls themselves a masseuse, not all the time. I have heard a few people, I'm like, why would you call yourself that if you're a professional?
Yeah. Yeah.
More than likely than not, it's sex work.
Yeah.
That's
and I know like a lot of people would say that to me, like
they still
literally not knowing. And it's okay. I mean, it's one thing like but we're telling you now.
If you're not in the profession,
yeah,
I understand why you think. Just have a lady last week be like, she's like, how long have you been a masseuse for? And I had never seen this woman before. And I'm like, I don't know how to tell her.
I know.
Without it's like sounding awkward. Like a bitch.
Yeah. Because I know they don't mean it to sound bad. I know. But it's just awkward.
I know. Yeah. And I was like, because I know I have, I know I'm like, I wanted to be like, I've never been a masseuse. I've always been a massage therapist.
Yeah.
But I just told her how long I had been working for. But
yeah.
That being said, so FYI, if you get massages, Your worker is a massage therapist. They are not a masseuse.
If you work at a parlor, yeah, that's not.
Yeah. And that's my other thing I have written here. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen a legit massage business calling itself a massage parlor. No, it's usually like spa, wellness center, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah. But it is weird because the most popular one in town is actually called Jan's Health Studio, which is weird because usually it's just called like a massage parlor.
Correct.
So it's weird that it actually did have something like Health Studio.
Yeah.
It's a good
cover, I guess.
Yep. So Jerry actually became a frequent there, usually requesting one specific woman.
Masseuse, if you will.
Yeah. Any guesses on who it was?
Yeah. We're going to go with Barbara.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. It was Barbara Hoffman. And the thing is, though, is like he eventually got to a point where like it wasn't even just about sex. Like sometimes he would just sit and talk with her. Paying
lonely.
Her.
Aww.
Yeah. Like he just wanted a human interaction. And so he would still pay her going rate to just sit and talk, which FYI was $50 for 35 minutes. And this would have been like 75. Yeah. But still I did roughly, that's like roughly $254 today.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. So now for the unknown deceased man, police will find out that this is 51-year-old Harry Burge. Harry was also a loner. He had grown up on a farm, and after high school, he stayed on the farm to help his parents. So, like, he just always lived on the farm with his parents doing farm work.
Okay.
And then, unfortunately, his family lost the farm. It sounds like he was maybe in his 40s at this point, and they moved into town in Madison. Lived with his parents until his dad died, and then about 4 years later his mom died. So at the age of 48 years old, Harry's finally living by himself for the first time. And
well, better late than never.
Yeah. So he had an older sister, and she said, you know, it didn't seem that weird to her that he never dated, because the thing is like he was constantly working on the farm. He didn't have time for that. You know, they didn't have enough, obviously, like they lost the farm. They were barely making ends meet. And then when they moved to town, he worked second shift as a forklift driver at this like factory place. And then on his days off, he like bowled once a week, or he went fishing or hunting, things like that. So like Harry especially isn't someone I would consider a quote unquote sad sack. This just seems like a guy who
hardworking.
Does what he likes to do, but he did still have needs, and so he would also frequent Jan's, because police discover this, like, when they're searching his apartment for stuff, they find a box that I don't know, I guess if it had receipts or something, but from, like, 1974 to 77, for a total of, like, around $1,630, so around $8,000 to $9,000 in today's, that he had spent at Jan's Health Studio. with Barb.
Okay. So Barb clearly knew him. Okay.
Uh-huh. So now let's talk a little bit about Barbara. And this is where, like, especially her, we have, like, not a lot of information about her as a person, her background. I'm guessing she was born in, like, 1951 because the episode of Once Upon a Crime came out in 2016. And at the end of it, she mentioned Barbara being 64 years old today. So I just mathed it.
Yeah.
She grew up in Illinois. Don't know where. And I don't know if the book would have said even or anything, because it sounds like she never gave much information about herself either. Mm. So, but she was the top of her class. She had an IQ of 145, which is considered highly gifted. She scored in the 98th percentile for her college entrance exams and had a full ride scholarship to Butler University in Indianapolis.
All right.
So eventually she transfers to the University of Illinois in Chicago, but then soon after that she transferred to the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And again, I have no clue on the timelines of this. Like, she graduated high school in 1970. So, like, I don't, so yeah, I think she stayed at Butler for like a year or two, maybe. I don't know. But anyways, like, so she's eventually at the University of Wisconsin. And she's actually majoring in biochemistry. Yeah.
So she had smart. Yeah.
Yeah. She had a 3.9 GPA. She actually had A's in several of her science classes. And she was just 12 credits away from her bachelor's of science in biochemistry when she decided to request a leave of absence in 1974. So she did re-enroll in 1975, but only stayed a week before dropping out. So obviously we know at this point she was working at Jan's. So I don't know if she was just like, why would I finish this when I'm making so much money here?
Yeah.
You know, sad, exactly. Because
it sounds like she really did have a lot going for herself. Very smart. I mean.
Yes.
That sucks.
So it would come out later that she had confided to her mom that what she was doing. Like, she told her mom about being a sex worker at Jan's. She told her that originally she just answered an ad for a receptionist there. But she soon discovered what exactly was going on there and how much, like, when she saw how much those women were making, she decided to start doing sex work as well. Which, hey, you get it. If you're like, yes, that's how I want to make my money, fantastic. So at Jams, you could not only pay for sex, but to watch women have sex. And if you were into, you know, BDSM, that was a thing there too.
And it sounds like,
yep, it sounds like Barbara did quite a bit of that side of things.
Oh.
And she became known as the queen of massage parlors by her coworkers and clients. She was, I mean, she was very sought after. She had a lot of clients. Now, like, Jerry, it doesn't sound like Jerry and Harry were into, I know.
It's funny.
Were into that side of things.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so this is the other thing I'm a little unsure about. So in a couple of the articles, it talked about how her sex worker name was Linda Miller. But then in the podcast, she talks about how Barbara decided to change her name after she got out of sex work to, like, leave that all behind her.
Oh, but so, okay, it could go either way.
It could go either way. Either way, the name's important. Not so much about, like, when it came about, but just that it was a name she was associated with. So, Barbara, you know, both of these men are her clients. Before she leaves the industry, she kind of suggests to both of them, hey, we should see each other outside of here. And of course she doesn't, neither man knows about the other one, right? They think they have something special with Barbara. She tells them, you know, that she doesn't want to be doing this anymore. She wants to get out of it, but she needs to marry them first before she can. So for Harry, she convinced him to put her as the beneficiary on his will.
Oh, dang.
And that included a $35,000 insurance policy, life insurance policy, which is almost $183,000 today. And Jerry, she convinced him to take out a life insurance policy for $750,000.
Jeez.
Which would be worth over $3.8 million today. And the thing is, like, that large of a life insurance policy, first of all, him just being like a clerk wouldn't, that no one would have approved that. So he also said he was a silent owner of Jan's and some of the other massage parlors. And so eventually they find someone to sign off on this insurance policy. And the thing is too, is the premium is over $13,000 a year that you have to pay for this. So it's broken into over $6,000 payments twice a year.
Jeez.
And we're going to come back to that, right? So Barbara is carrying on a relationship with both of these men. And in 1977, she leaves Jan's to become a clerk at an insurance agency, which none of the women she worked with believed she would leave such a lucrative job, because like she bragged about making $23,000 in 1 year for working 3 days a week, which is over $117,000 today.
Yeah, that's insane.
So they thought she actually set up shop out of her apartment, which a lot of neighbors stated they would see a lot of different men's shoes outside of her apartment door because she didn't allow shoes in her apartment. So
that's a good way to kind of call yourself out there, I guess.
And so she's the one who paid the first three payments on Jerry's $750,000 premium, most likely with that money.
Oh, yeah.
So it's also said that Barbara herself actually didn't really have friends either. Like, the women she worked with knew nothing about her. She didn't hang out with them outside of work. But the podcast mentions, and I'm not sure exactly when this party was, if it was before she left. But apparently Barbara liked Quaaludes, which a lot of times women who are in sex work do drink or, you know, take drugs, especially if it's kind of like not really what they want to be doing, you know, it's like a coping mechanism.
Oh yeah.
Totally. So no one really thought too much about that. But apparently when Barbara was drunk or high, she talked. And they were at this party and she started bragging about how she had this genius idea. She was going to be set. She was going to be rich. She was going to marry this lonely man who she had convinced she loved. She convinced him to take out this large, almost $1 million life insurance policy. And actually, because of her background in science and biochemistry, she knew how to grow botulism.
Oh.
So she was talking about how their marriage, their wedding date was set. She had the marriage certificate. They were going to go to Mexico. She had the passports. And while there, she would poison him. So it looked like, you know, just a tragic case of severe food poisoning while in Mexico. And then she'd get him cremated before they came back so no one could test or do anything. And she would be set.
Okay.
Well, there was a man. There's a man named William Garrett who's in this scene because he's actually owned and co-owned four of these massage parlors around town, including Jan's. And he was also suspected of being like a drug runner and selling illegal firearms. But he heard about this story secondhand from like his roommate or something. So he goes over to her apartment to confront her about this. He's like, this is a stupid idea. Insurance companies for such a large policy are going to look into this. You're not going to get away with it. And I guess she was like, well, what do you care? And then she's like, it wasn't true anyways. Like that never happened. But he mentioned seeing what looked like a checklist on her fridge that had like marriage certificate, passport, you know, and those were marked off. So police then theorize that Jerry was the original mark, right? Because that's the biggest life insurance policy.
That's what I thought. Well, wouldn't you go towards the bigger one of them?
Exactly.
She wanted to have her options open, apparently. Yeah. So, you know.
So they think Jerry was the original mark, but she was worried that if she still went along with it, a lot of people would remember that, you know. So she figured, so police theorized that she decided to kill Harry to use his insurance to pay the premium still for Jerry's until she could kill Jerry and get that money. So they have Jerry wear a wire. Because the thing is like after all of this. They search Barbara's apartment, find nothing except for, like, not even like personal photos, no nickname, like nothing except for a box under her bed of pornographic pictures from men and women from Jams. They have no idea why she had those. Like, was this like for blackmail later or something?
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Because I guess it'll come out later that she used to blackmail some of her Johns to get loans out for her and stuff like that. So,
well, she sounds very, she knows what she's doing. Well,
yeah.
I think she knows what she's doing, I guess.
Exactly.
All about that money. Yeah.
So they decide to have Jerry wear a wire and they're like, do not go back to her apartment, meet her at a bar or whatever. But Barbara's smart. And she's like, you're wearing a wire, aren't you? And he's like, yes, yes, I am. So, because the thing is Jerry still doesn't think Barbara actually killed him. He believes her that she was framed.
Mm-hmm.
So the police do go and search around the dumpster again. And this time they actually find something. They find Harry's blood and they find some of his hair. And I think this was maybe in then February or March of 1978. So they figured between this and Jerry's testimony, they've got this, right? They'll be good. And they were watching Jerry. For some reason, the like hearing, like the arraignment hearing to like be able to arrest her wasn't until like April. Yeah, I don't know why we had to wait this long.
Hold up was, yeah.
Yeah. So then on Monday, March 27th, the DA, the Barbara's defense attorney, a newspaper, and the police department all receive the exact same letter dated March 25th, which was Easter weekend.
Always holidays falling on these. Okay. Yep.
From Jerry, stating pretty much that he had lied. He went crazy. He was jealous. He was just trying to ruin Barbara's life. And so, like, all these things, Barbara didn't do it.
She's got these dudes brainwashed.
I mean, saying she was innocent.
Take out the policies and all that. Like, oh, wow. That's
well,
intense.
So then police very much think Barbara convinced him to do this, right? So they're like, they know he's super skittish. So like, we'll give it a couple days. We'll approach him still, like, whatever. Except on that same day, that Monday, March 27th, Jerry's upstairs neighbor calls maintenance to complain about the fact that Jerry's bathroom fan has been going nonstop all day. And it must be a really loud fan because
they hear it was it,
like it pissed them off. So they called to get them to go over and knock and turn it off. So management and maintenance go over. They knock on the door. When there's no answer, they're like, okay, we'll just go in, flip off the switch and leave.
Mm-hmm.
Except when they go into the bathroom, they find Jerry deceased in the bathtub. He is naked. It looks like he's been there for a while. Now, mind you, his head is above water. Okay. Remember that. There is a robe and slippers beside the bathtub. It looks like he's been in here for a while. Like his body's all pruney where it's been in the water. But then like above it, it's like purpley and stuff, like rigor mortis had set in. Mm-hmm. So they think he's been dead for a little while. So they do an autopsy. And the thing is there's no trauma
obvious
to the
size
body.
That's
there's
what I was going to ask. Was there any, like, did he kill himself is where I was.
Well. So one of the other things police found in the bathroom was a prescription bottle dated March 13th with his name on it for 2 milligrams of Valium, and there were 50 tablets.
Oh.
And that's empty.
Oh.
So they were like, well, him being suicidal wouldn't necessarily, you know, be a thing, but like, but this is weird. However, when the autopsy is performed, everything is fine except for his lungs. They look as if he drowned.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
But he didn't. Now, his bathroom is immaculate. His apartment's immaculate. They also find a check dated for April 8th for his rent.
So someone who was about to take their own life probably wouldn't start or pay their rent in advance or have plans to, or you would at least drop it off if you're going to try to hide your body for that long or whatever.
Yes. So his cause of death is ruled as accidental drowning.
But his head was above the water. So that's okay.
Got it. However, there is like a toxicologist who, like, all of his organs are removed before he's sent. And so they still have it. So he's like running all of these tests. And the thing is he does find in his stomach that Jerry clearly had a meal before he took this bath. And it was chili with carrots in it, which he's like, that's really weird. Who puts carrots in their chili? But like, whatever.
Someone who's going to poison them. Yeah.
Well, this comes back into play. So then one day when he's like a week later, he's going over all this stuff and he notices a smell of burnt almonds. Which cyanide gives off a smell of burnt almonds. And the thing is, this is faint. So he runs a test. Sure enough, he finds 2 times the lethal amount of cyanide in Jerry's blood. Yeah. So he's like, he was even like, how did the coroner not catch this? Because this smell would have been much stronger a week ago when he was going over this. Apparently, it turns out like, a quarter of the population has this defect, like hereditary defect, that makes it so you can't smell burnt almonds, which is the most random thing. But it's like, it's almost like that whole like gene that makes, cilantro tastes like soap or something for some people.
Oh, huh. Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So the coroner couldn't smell it.
Interesting. Because it's not like it's a smell you're used to, like, right? You would just identify it right away. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's definitely burnt.
So,
ew.
Police, like, toxicologist tells police. So police run Harry's.
Oh, yes.
And his is 38 times the lethal dose.
Ooh.
Yes. So now Barbara is arrested, finally. And she is charged with both Harry and Jerry's murders. However, she makes bail, and it's not until 1980 It's not until 1980 that she actually goes to trial. And this was the first televised trial from start to finish in Wisconsin. So, of course, then, too, you have sex trade in Wisconsin. All this. It's a sensationalized case. Like, people are showing up early to try to be part of this and everything, right? So, you know, police give their theory, how it all went out.
Do we think – sorry, and you can tell me that you're going to talk about this later if you are. But do we think that she – hit was it Harry or did whatever to make it look like someone else had attacked him? If she killed him, I mean, if he was also poisoned.
They never fully address that
because I feel like would be able to tell too if that was like that happened after he was already dead, like to make you know what I mean?
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking about
that never really comes up again.
Yeah, I guess they have enough to kind of
people have and stuff. Yeah. So,
why do so that? So,
the defense says, no, Jerry found out about Harry, got super jealous, killed him, tried jealous to frame rage. Barbara. Then, you know, he felt super guilty about it, so he recanted and took his own life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, defense even has Barbara's parents come, and now when they're trying to give like character witness and stuff, they don't talk about like who she is, her friends, stuff. It's all that academic stuff. And her dad's like, no, we were there from December 22nd through December 24th, and she drove back to home with us, and then the weekend of Easter we were there the whole weekend, and she never had any late night phone calls or anything like that. We would have heard, yada, yada. We stayed until that Sunday evening, right? But now defense is also like, or not defense, prosecution's like, why wouldn't you have come up like if this, because that would exonerate, if this was the true alibi, this would exonerate her.
From the very beginning.
Yeah. Why didn't you come forward 2 years ago with this?
Right. Why is just this brand new information?
And also, it's like they would say the exact same things as if they were like giving a rehearsed script.
Mm.
So prosecution comes forward and they're like, actually, that weekend of Easter, there are several long distance phone calls at midnight, 1 a.m. and all this stuff from to Massachusetts, or I don't know, another state and Illinois and stuff like that, right? And pretty much they negate it. Like, also, like the fact that she had gone to work on the 23rd, Jerry had picked her up, you know, there are these things. And so the prosecution just kind of like debunks their alibis.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, too, is her parents don't stick around for the verdict. As soon as they are done giving their testimony, they peace out.
Yeah, so
that's why I'm so curious about her life prior to.
Yeah.
You know what,
like,
I mean?
Like, why go in there and try to save her ass, but then like, okay, bye, now we don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's weird. She's trying to pay them off too, you know? Like,
right. I have no idea. So jury deliberates for a total of like 14 hours. It takes 2 days. And they come back and they find her not guilty of Jerry's murder.
Wow.
But they find her guilty of Harry's.
Well, at least that's something, but still.
Yeah. So first degree murder came with an automatic life sentence, but she would be qualified for parole after 11 years.
11 years? That's so funny to me how they come up with these things. It's like life, this extreme, but it actually 11 if you're good.
Yeah. JK, it's 11.
Yeah.
So she maintains her innocence, but like even in jail, like she doesn't say anything. She doesn't give interviews. She doesn't do anything like that. Except another thing that comes up is because she wasn't found guilty of Jerry's murder, she can still take his life insurance policy. So she's still up to get $20,000.
That is,
but Jerry's mom is like, I was his beneficiary until 3 weeks before his death. Like, I will take you to civil court, and civil court has less like rules to finding someone guilty.
Yeah.
So I guess they end up making a deal, and like Barbara still gets 10 grand and his mom. I was like, no, what
kind of deal is that? Ridiculous.
No.
So she still gets to gets away with killing him and then taking his money.
And gets 10 grand.
Yeah. Wow.
And so then in 1991, she comes up for parole, but it's denied.
Okay. Well, good.
And she never tries to get parole again. Like, she's eligible to go for parole, and she never has. So as of 2016, she was 64 years old and still in prison in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, I believe.
Yeah.
Which I know we did an episode there.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. Like, I couldn't find anything like present day. Like, wild. Is she still alive? I mean, that was what 2016 was.
I mean, that's been a good almost, I mean, 8 years almost.
8 years. Yeah. So, I mean, she could still definitely be alive. I have no idea. Like, it's so hard because sometimes when you search his name, if you don't put Wisconsin, it comes up with like a lawyer firm and stuff like that.
Yeah. Wow.
That's
wild.
The case of the queen of massage parlors.
Wow. Well, that's fitting since, you know, massages in,
I know,
in the vicinity here of our, the realms of our,
I know,
here.
Well, like I mean, like, I did kind of search like Christmas, you know,
yeah,
this came up, and then it was the whole, and I'm like,
that's
this is
crazy.
Still something that, like, one, how has this not been a Lifetime movie?
I know.
But also, like, on Women Who Kill or something like that.
Yes.
Or do you remember that, like,
anything?
Evil Genius or whatever Netflix, that one woman who was like that? And I'm like, how did we not do a second season about this woman?
I know. That's crazy. This woman's clearly very well calculated. I mean, very intelligent, book smart, as far as knew what she was doing to get away with things. And
so it also makes you wonder, like, is she a sociopath? Because,
right,
like, they talk about, which this also was kind of close to home, because they called her the Ice Queen a lot. Because she, like, showed no emotions. And I'm like, oh, that's, like, what my husband called me the first time he met me.
That's funny.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm so curious as to, like, more about her and, like, what her life was like growing up. And, like, were there signs of, like, some sort of, like, sociopath in it. And, like, we don't really have human emotions, and we're just looking at the best way we can get money.
Yeah. All about that money. It sounds like that. I mean, even quitting school to go just pursue that. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
which, because that was something I forgot to mention for their evidence, too, is they did look back, because they were like, how did she get the cyanide?
Yeah.
Well, there had been medical deliveries to both her and Jerry's apartments.
Interesting.
To create, like, grow botulism. But also, as early as May of 1977, cyanide was delivered as well. So that was part of also why they thought they had enough evidence, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know how they found her not guilty. That is insane. Jerry's.
That's sad too. Poor guy.
In the podcast episode, she was talking about how she came across this theory that maybe Harry's was an accidental thing because cyanide can look like sugar, and he drinks coffee with sugar, and coffee was found in his system, and that's why there was so much extra, because she would have known how much it took to kill him. But I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. Because then too with Jerry, it doesn't make sense. Like, or with Harry, like, why was his head bashed in and why his genitals?
Yeah, that's like very angry and like a sexual like thing.
So,
like,
some people think that like maybe his wasn't quite planned. Like it was some sort of passion in the moment thing. And because they were like, if she had planned out Jerry's so much,
right?
Like, why would she have, she has no car, she has nowhere to take, so why would she kill Harry in her apartment when she doesn't have a way to get rid of him, and she would have had to take him down 3 flights of stairs?
Yeah. Which I find that really interesting to see her dragging some giant guy. I mean, I guess I don't know how big he is, but like just some dude general, he was still bigger,
but like
a dead weight too. I mean,
mm-hmm. And I guess, I mean, it was probably like in the middle of the night and stuff. It sounds like mm-hmm. when her Jerry did it too, but
that's kind of weird.
And she maintains her innocence, but I'm like, also if you maintain your innocence, like why haven't you tried more for
parole? I find that weird too. And why does she not want to get out? Like, if she has all this money anyway, which I guess it's, I mean, you can do whatever you want there with your money if you want to just buy more ramen noodles or whatever. Right. I don't know.
But yeah.
But wow. That's crazy. That's interesting. And what's the movie called again? One more time.
Winter of Frozen Dreams.
Interesting. Now I kind of want to watch it just because I'm curious.
It's on Amazon.
Interesting. A big enough case for them to make a movie, and obviously not like a blockbuster hit or anything, but interesting.
Yeah, it was, like I said, I was very surprised that there wasn't more on it, like that there haven't been shows and stuff or a documentary.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Especially because there are so many different documentary or series of shows and stuff that they could have put that on.
Yeah. Okay, the movie came out in 2009.
Okay, so, I mean, still, like, more recent than you would expect with the case that's being, as old as it is. So, okay, well.
Yeah, so that's the case of the Queen of Massage Parlors.
Wow. That's a fun one, just because of the, being a little ironic with all the things of the massage. So
yeah.
Okay, well,
have you read anything or watched anything?
I did read Hidden Pictures and I loved it. I
thought it was good. Right,
so good. Yeah, that's one of the best books I think I've read in a while. I just thought it was very well written, and it's funny because I had posted a thing about reading it, and I had this other person who is the last person I would ever expect to love that kind of thing was like, this book was phenomenal. And then gave me all these other recommendations of these other books. So I was like, all right, sweet. But that's it. That's all I've read. And I haven't really watched anything. I mean, nothing worth noting, I guess. But yeah. What about you?
Nice. I haven't watched anything. I read a cute little rom-com called Geekerella, and it's a YA. It's a Cinderella retelling, but like with Comic-Con type aspects.
Oh yeah. Oh,
it's cute. Fun. And then I read Fireworks, which is like a K-drama in book format. It was super cute. And then on Sunday, I read a like 500-page book called The Serpent and the Wings of Night, which is a vampire novel.
All right. Well, there you go.
Where like humans are like second-class citizens and stuff. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of stuff.
That's fun.
It was interesting. I haven't been able to start book two of that series yet because then I had to work and then I had to,
do this stuff. That's fun.
So, yeah. Well, nothing too crazy on my end. Otherwise, like I said, I just trying to get through each day this month and like trying to remember all the things I have to do before it's holiday time.
I know. I know. I hear you. And I'm sure that's how everyone else is feeling at this point. It's like hard to carve in any time out to really do things that are like enjoyable, you know?
So it is. It really is. So yeah, that's what I got. You guys know the drill. Follow us on social media. Share, rate, review, all those things. Everything's linked in our show notes. And until next time, stay heartland kind.
But darkland wary.